and Matt Colster from McMaster University will speak about special values of facts and data functions in Markov Kumar.
Thanks. Ram and Kumar for inviting me. I must say I didn't quite know what to talk about, so the title is a little bit vague, but I had a few days to somehow see what, because I'm not really in transcendence theory, I'm more in special values and their algebraic interpretation. So I hope there's something maybe interesting for this workshop. So in a sense, this will be a little bit of an expository talk going a little bit about algebraic K-theory and the interpretation of these special values. And I really want to... So we are looking at zeta 2. And so this was in Ram's talk. And then during that day, the 6 was removed. And so I want to revitalize the 6 and remove pi squared. And the way you remove pi squared is by going to the negative side using the functional equation. So this gives you that zeta of minus 1 is 1 over 12. So that 2 is multiplied by 6 and the pi squared is gone. And more generally, of course, I give you one more example. So this turns out to be 1 over 120, and of course they are all at odd negative integers are rational numbers given by Bernoulli numbers, essentially. So a question, of course, is, I mean, what do these numbers count? I mean, this is number theory, so if you see integers, they are counting something, and the question is, what is this? I mean, what are they counting? And if they are not rational, then what is this extra information giving us? Okay, so more generally then, let's look at a number field F, and I use F is the field, and so if I needed, the ring of integers would be simply OF, and we are looking at the Dedekind zeta function, as Kumar did. So again, there's the functional equation, and we are interested, so we are working on the negative side, because there is the essential information, as you will see from the classical class number formula. So we are interested in the vanishing. So I take any integer n large equal to 1, and so dn would be the order of vanishing of this zeta function at s equal to 1 minus n. So going from the value at n to the value at 1 minus n. And because of all these poles of the gamma factors, you can easily find out what the order of vanishing is, because those poles have to be compensated by the corresponding number of zeros. So that number dn is as follows. So it's the classical one is R1 plus R2 minus 1. That's the case n equal to 1. And then it's R1 plus R2 if n is large or equal to 3 and odd. And then it's R2 if n is large or equal to 2 is even. And as usual, of course, these are the number of real and correspondingly pairs of complex conjugate embeddings of the field. So that is the information. And now the notation will be that we take this star would mean we are looking at the first non-vanishing coefficient if we look at the function around 1 minus n. So this is what is called the special value. At 1 minus n. And so Dirichlet's class number formula, the analytic class number formula, versus this way going to the negative side, is the following. So it tells you that zeta star f, so we are looking at the case n equal to 1 now, which is the 0, and that is the classical case. So this is minus the taking, this is what essentially Kumar wrote already down. This is the number of, this is the class number of F divided by the number of roots of unities times the regulator. And so the goal would be, so I take anything now largely equal to 2, and I want to do the same thing at 1 minus n. I will get a sign given by the function of the equation that just depends on n mod 4. So you can easily figure out what this is. And then I want to be able to write this as hnf divided by wnf times Rn of f. Of course, I can always do that. So pick your favorite way of writing some real numbers. So I want this to be rational. I want this to be a regulator. Yeah. Remember, this is the determinant of some matrix, which is the dimension is given by D1, named the rank of the unit group. And you're essentially taking a matrix where you take logarithms of these, of the basis of that OF star, the units, and then you take its determinant. I mean, there's kind of a one missing there because you have one relation.
What about powers of pi?
Sorry?
What about powers of pi?
No.
In the model,
well, you're going to the...
Not there, in the next one.
Here? No. So if you do the right regulator, there are no powers of pi. Okay? So I want something, this is the class number, so this is some deep algebraic information. This is easy to compute. I want something analog, and we will see that that's easy to describe. We want to know what this means, what is the size of the group, should measure the size of a group, and then there should be some regulator which hopefully will be, as Ram explained, polylogarithms of something. And I'm going to, I didn't plan this, but I'm going to do a little bit about how this is, how Goncharov's and Zagier's work does exactly that kind of interpretation. All right. So, I think classically this question never came up because obviously there were no candidates, right? There were no candidates. So the candidates showed up when there was K theory. So you don't have to be scared because this will be very brief. So the K theory just means you take any ring. K0 goes back to Grothendieck. That's the Grothendieck group. And you're essentially classifying isomorphism classes of finite degenerated projective modules. So this is the Grothendieck group. And so in brackets, I just write down what this means in our specific example that we have the ring of integers of a number field. So K0 of OF. This is just, of course, you have free modules, so that gives you a copy of the integers, and then you get the class group of OF, whose order is H, right? This is the class number, and that's just because you know what these things look like. Okay, so then there's K1 of R. Now it's a little bit more interesting. So what you do is you take the infinite linear group. So you take GLNR and you embed it into the next dimension by just adding a 1 at the lower right corner. And you've seen that before. So you get this infinite linear group and you make it abelian. So in homological terms, I mean, this is just H1 of GLR. It's a fancy way of doing it. So this is integral homology. And that's kind of important. It's not deep, but it's important to know that has something to do with the homology of this GLR. And the way you write, so let me write down what this is GLR, and then you take all the commutators, And I should, since I put Grotenberg up there, I should Bass should be here. So unfortunately, I don't have the pictures. I mean, with all these pictures of, Grotenberg would be hard to get a picture now. Of him right now. But Bass is this beard, and Grotenberg has a long beard, and then there will be the next one will be Milner, and Milner has another doesn't wear a beard, I think. Okay, maybe I'll write this down here. There is one. Oh, he has that. Wasn't he in some function in the on the AMS recently, in education or something like that? I think I saw something. Yeah. Okay. So I have to put this on mute because otherwise it's all recorded. inside of GLR, you have the so-called elementary matrices. So those are the ones which have ones. Oh, I shouldn't do that. Ones on the diagonal and one thing off the diagonal. All these elementary matrices of any dimension with one off non-zero entries. And this is actually equal to that commutator group. That's easy to show. That's why it's lemma. Okay, so this group, there are some easy relations between elementary matrices. How do they commute and what do you get? So if you just take as generators, you take the ones which have things in positions I and j, where I is different from j, and then you just take those generators, give them a different name, and just take the relations you know are holding, the trivial relations. That gives you a covering of this. And so this is a surjective homomorphism. And it turns out, and that's what Milner showed, this is a perfect group. So it's equal to its own commutator subgroup, and therefore it has a universal central extension. So this is Milner's, this is the Steinberg group. And it's the universal central extension. And so the kernel of this, by definition of Milner, is called K2 of R. And why do I say, and the universal central extension, the kernel is the second homology with integral coefficients of the elementary matrices. So far we have the Grotenberg group is a little bit different. But then we have something which is related to the homology of the GLR. K2 is related to the homology of some interesting subgroup. And so Quillen thought we should generalize this so that there is a higher K theory which is related, at least in a sense, to the homology of the general linear group in one way. And so here's what Quillen did. No. GLR is the limit. You go all to infinity. Yeah. This is the stable linear group. Yeah. Sometimes you can reduce this. I mean, if it's a field, I mean, you just take GL1, and that will do it already. So you should think about this as being the determinant. So the example here would be, of course, and that's a deep result, by the way, that this K1 of OF, if it's abelian, you always get the units. But this is actually isomorphic to OF star. And that's a highly non-trivial result. Let's see. ER is inside of GLR. It's just this limit of the elementary. Yes, but in general, for an arbitrary R, SLR doesn't make sense. Right, because it's a non-commutative. You wouldn't have you don't have the determinant functor. Right? Okay. But here, in general, even if it's commutative, so this you split off the units, and then there's something which is non-trivial in general. In this situation, it's not. All right. So now you see, I mean, if I just go back to this K-theory interpretation now of the classical Dirichlet result, well, we got somehow, in the denominator, we have the order of the torsion of this K0, right? That's the order of the torsion of K0. In the denominator, we have the torsion of the units of K1, because that's the roots of unities. This is the torsion part. And then we have a regulator, which is the determinant of the matrix, whose rank is exactly the rank of the K1. So the idea then is, well, if I just replace everything by higher n's, the formula like that should work. So I replace this with a higher K group, this one with a torsion and another higher K group, and the regulator should have the right dimension, and so on. So here's what Quillen did. And so that gave him the Fields Medal, so don't expect this to be completely straightforward. So I will muse about what you thought. I mean, people were trying to generalize this. One way was Milner, and I come to that. For Fields, he generalized it in a different direction. But somehow he wanted to realize these higher K groups as homotopy groups of a certain topological space where the integral homology of that space should be closely related to the homology, integral homology of the GLR. Okay? So the first step is you go from GLR to the classifying space of GLR. Now what's that? So that's easy to describe, because that's a connected space whose fundamental group is GLR, and all the higher homotopy groups are trivial. So this is obviously not a good candidate, because you want to use the higher. So here's the ingenious idea now. So you want to change, you want to do a construction to this, and this is the so-called plus construction. Which will change this, so you want the, so you're constructing BGLR plus, and the way it's done, it's you're attaching kind of two cells and three cells to this topological space, so that you are changing the fundamental group to GLR mod ER, which of course is, as we know, K1 of R, so you want to recover the classical result. And then you want the higher ones, you want the homology of this to be the same as the homology of the GLR. Okay. So in other words, the homology of this space, so HN, if you want, of this BGLR plus, that doesn't change at all. So this is the HLN of BLGN R, and that's known to not change the homology, the integral homology of GLR. So you're preserving the homology. And this plus construction, this is the key to this. So now you're using the higher homotopy groups. To define the higher K theory. So we got already the K1 right. This was by just making sure the fundamental group goes to a quotient, but it doesn't say that we also recover the K2, but that's true. Okay. So the definition now is, the Quillen's definition is that Kn of a ring R would just be the nth homotopy group of BGLR plus. And so this is correct for n equal to 1 and 2, and it has the right functorial properties people expected from a higher K-theory. Okay. So this is the definition, but it's of course clear that this is hard to describe. Right? It's a very topological construction, so how do you ever compute this? Yes? It's big. It's big, yeah. I mean, you just see it here. I mean, this is K1 of R can be, yeah, can be any. It's big. Sorry? No, but it is. It is, yeah. These K groups, I mean, we see the nice patterns once we go into number theory. I mean, they have a beautiful pattern, and they show up in this formula. So the nice thing about this is it comes with the construction gives you a canonical map from K and N. I mean, you're going from pi n of the GLR plus from the homotopy group into the homology. And so it gives you a map in HN GLR, and this is what is called the Horevitz map, because it goes from homotopy into homology. And the kernel of this is torsion, right? The kernel is finite. And the image is what are called primitive elements in this homology group. So it has a description in terms of this homology. And so the next step, Kern proved a lot of things, that K-theory, he computed the K-theory of finite fields and so on. But for us important is the next step, there's Borel. Borel tells us what these things are as groups in the case of rings of integers or fields. Okay, so here's Borel now. And if you think, when did this happen? Well, this whole thing happened in the 1960s. I mean, a lot of things happened in the 1960s. Most of you don't remember that because they were not born. But a lot of things happened in 1960, and so in mathematics, this happened at the end of the 1960s. Borel was still, I think, 1969. Michel, you are my dictionary of numbers. Who did what in which year? I think Borel was something like 1969, and then things exploded. So he was actually the one who constructed this regulator we are looking at. Right? So that's a very deep construction. So construction of a regulator. And he used this, and then a lot of differential geometry actually on that space. It's a marvelous paper. And so what he came up with is, if you have a field, a number field now, as before we have a number field, so you go, of course, you go to k to n minus 1 of C in many ways, right? And then you have, maybe I shouldn't write this way. But all the embeddings you have, you're actually going to a real vector space of the right dimension. And the kernel of this is torsion. So the kernel is torsion. So this is, in fact, finite. And this is, sorry? That's the consequence of this, right? So that's why he got a lot of things about this. So let's this is the Borel regulator map. Okay, I'll level that. Okay. So it's not explicit. It just says there is a regulator map. It's defined in terms of differential geometry data, and it has the right property. It gets this into the right space. The image of this, and that's what he showed, is a full lattice in RDN, so we can take the covolume and define this to be the regulator. Okay? So it defines, I think I called this RN. I call this RN, but I want to keep that B up there because there are other definitions and so on. So this defines a regulator of that form. We don't know whether we compute things in terms of determinants of matrices or something. It's just a regulator. But the consequence of this is the following. It gives us the structure of this. And let me mention that that this is equal to the odd K group of the ring of integers. You see, if you've ever done number theory with units, you get S units enlarging S, and finally you have everything F star of the field. In higher K theory, it's immediately the same. That makes life easy. You don't have to do S integers because this is already the same as that. That's due to Soulet. And this is simply, again, it's a finitely generated module plus some finite torsion, so plus something finite. It's a very easy structure. And then as a byproduct, you also get, and there's a reason why I write the even number as 2n minus 2. You will see that it's because it belongs to the same value of the zeta function. Otherwise, you would ask, why don't you write k to n? Right? So it's k to n minus 2 of OF. This is finite. So the version we want is, and that's what Lichtenbaum conjectured, is that this should give us the right formula for the special value. Okay, so here's Lichtenbaum, early 70s. Nowadays it's called Lichtenbaum conjecture. It was a question. Yeah, he was very modest. He formulated a question, and it was immediately high inflationed into a conjecture. But it was one of the. So the conjecture is that zeta f star 1 minus n should be. So you're taking the order of the k group k to n minus 1 of OF. You divide, well, there's this lattice. You want to divide by something finite. So this finite thing should play the role of roots of unity. So you take that torsion part of F or OF, it doesn't matter. You take the torsion part times this Borel regulator. And it was clear that this up to powers of 2. It was clear the very first example you try shows that it's not correct. Right? So I give you that example. This is zeta of minus 1, yeah, which is 1/12. We had that. So is this 1/12? In those days, it was known that the K theory, the K2 of the integers, that's the numerator, was just of order 2. Okay. And it was known that this torsion here is of order, cyclic of order 48. Oof, I just missed it. Right? So this isn't quite true. Right? So and then people try to modify this by saying something that we take only the non-decomposable K3, but this whole thing never works. And that's maybe, if I have time, I come to the end, because we are using somehow still not quite the right interpretation. So if I run out of time, I say it now. These groups are closely related to what are called motivic cohomology groups, which Bloch-Vygotsky defined. And the only difference between the two of them is for the prime 2. And the motivic cohomology group gives you exactly the right power of 2 you want. So this formulation is, K-theoretically, is not quite correct. So in a sense, this conjecture, so this is a conjecture, of course, and I tell you what's known about this. But it doesn't quite achieve the goal we have. It was not just to write this in a form where this gives us an order of some arithmetically interesting group, and that's what these K groups are. So this rational number has a very good interpretation, but we wanted the regulator to be something like given by some polylogarithm map, and that would solve the problem much better. So Bloch actually was the first who thought there should be a much better interpretation and an approach to get this regulator. So here's what Bloch did. And he just did it for the die logarithm. Okay? So and then it was generalized. So here's where you start. So you take your field, you take the second exterior power of it. Okay? And you take the free group on F star minus 1. And I think, I mean, you should really look at this as being really the free group on P1 of F minus 3 points. That would be the more geometric interpretation. So if you want, this is really Z of P1 of F minus the 3 points 0, 1 infinity, because this all has a very geometric interpretation in terms of hyperbolic geometry and so on. So, but for the time being, we can just do that. And as a remark, I just want to tell you that the co-kernel here, I didn't give you the map. Okay. Okay. So you take any x in here to x which 1 minus x. I can just do it this. Yeah, I can leave those. Okay. And it's known that K to F, that's a deep theorem of Matsumoto's, is simply the tensor product of F star with itself modulo exactly this corresponding relation. Okay? So that gives you that surjectivity. So this is what is called Matsumoto's theorem. Yes? Sorry? Oh, for me, this is just F star tends F star, and then you take the relation, anti-symmetric relation. That's it. A tends of B plus B tends of A. Yeah? I mean, you can, that's the notation you sometimes use. So, yeah? You have higher ones. Yeah. And so, and now here we have this die logarithm. And there's a version of this die logarithm where you change it by logarithms and so on, which is due to Bloch and Wigner, which gives you somehow a single-valued function on instead of this multi-valued function where you just cut off the plane. I mean, you get a single-valued function, okay, for everything non-zero. And I denote this by say L2. I put a twiggle on there, L2. Because I'm supposed to write something like this, right, for this Bloch-Wigner thing. And if you know my handwriting, I mean, this will deteriorate in something which you cannot see anymore after a while. So I just put a rather twiggle on there. Yeah. So this logarithm, you see, the problem is, you want to divide this group out by the generating relations between these. So if you look at the logarithm, the standard logarithm, it simply has one defining relation, and that's that's this one. Right? Every other relation between logarithm values is a consequence of that. And the same thing is true for the die logarithm. It has the so-called five-term relation. So there's a unique relation which generates this. No, not unique. There's a five-term relation. And so what you do in this construction, I can write it down, but I don't want to lose too much time. So you do, and this is in the kernel of this map. So you're taking F star minus 1, and you're taking this modulo, the relations, say R2 of F. This is the submodule generated by this five-term relation you have. So this goes still to lambda to f. And the interesting thing is, so you have a kernel here, which is called the Bloch group. So that really measures. And remember, because we only divide it out by something on which the die logarithm is trivial, we have a die logarithm on that group. And the die logarithm also factors through this natural map, and therefore the die logarithm lives here. And this is a nice presentation. So if you can show that that thing has something to do with K3, then you have an explicit way of writing the regulator. And that's true. This was done by Suslin. So this is Suslin isomorphic to K3 of F up to torsion. So you get an isomorphism if you tensor by Q. It's finite kernel and co-kernel. And so this means you can write down this, this you can now see that the Borel regulator, right, which we have, that should have a version on that Bloch group. And it turns out this version is given by the die logarithm map on that. So in other words, you are going from K3 of F, you're going to B2 of F. Remember, the regulator lives on after you tensor this with Q. Well, with C, whatever you want. So you go with your map to RDN. And here, you go with all the embeddings into your real or complex image. You go into this B2 of the complex numbers and each component the same way you do it for units. And then you just take the composite map. So you get the DN by DN matrix describing this map. So this is somehow a die logarithm map. And that commutes. So this is a bunch, sorry? Oh, thank you. N is 3. Okay, so N is odd, right? So this means this is simply R1 plus R2. Thank you. R1 plus R2. So this, so in other words, the map with this model of K3 of F, you have an explicit die logarithm map on generators. So in other words, there exist generators which would do the job where you evaluate the regulator by taking a determinant of die logarithms of a basis, and then take a determinant. Okay. So this is as explicit as it will get. So the same is true. It becomes more and more complicated, in particular since we don't know the additional, what a basis of these relations of higher polylogarithms are. That's the main problem. But it was done by Goncharov for the, so Goncharov. And I think this was done in the late 80s and beginning of the 1990s. So he did the same thing for trilogarithms. Because they had a list of generators, so they know exactly what to divide by, you get an explicit map. And of course, Daguerre and conjecture this should be true in general. And this is still a conjecture, so we don't know exactly how to write this. But since we are at trilogarithms, so what does it tell us about this old problem which we discussed, zeta 3, right? Zeta 3. So so first of all, this is up to now I take a rational number because now we're not, I can specify that, but that's a little bit later. So if you use the functional equation, this is a pi square times a... a trilogarithm. I do the same thing here because you're modifying, there you get a single-valued function, right? So that's the trivial. You get a single-valued function. Everything is one-dimensional now because we are over Q. Remember, this is just R, right? So there's a single value which gives you this. So this is R3 of something which I looked for, because I didn't decide, when I was at home, I didn't decide to talk about this. And now I Googled and I went through everything. And it must be known what this is in terms of that description. It must be known which kind of element this is. And then there's something in Goncharov's paper where he said, well, Zaghi calculated a lot of these things, and you can find it in the, conference proceedings of the first European Congress in 1992. But these conference proceedings don't exist. I found that much out. So that reference was useless. I'll try to get something of Zaghi. But I give you an example which I found in Goncharov, which doesn't make much sense, but I give you the spirit of this. And this means you're taking the zeta function over q square root 5 at 3. So I offer you something more complicated, right? So again, up to a rational number, which you know, no, this is up to q square root 5 star, there's a 1 over square root 5 showing up, then this is just the L3 tilde of 1, so that's, and then you get L3 tilde of 1 plus square root 5 over 2, which of course is the fundamental unit, minus the value of 1 minus square root 3 over 2, square root 5 over 2. I hope you can read this. So in other words, the determinant seems to be two copies of L3 of 1, and then multiplying this with the function. Now, it makes me a little bit suspicious, because what is this at 1? I mean, and somehow we omitted the point 1. So I wanted to, again, look it up, but it's the same obscure reference. But I'm sure that there are lots of these calculations, and it should be clear what this is. I just don't know. Right? So I apologize for that. But and of course, you have the same picture, at least now for zeta at 5, and then zeta at 7. It should always be the corresponding power is 1 less than the number, times this polylogarithm on 1 generator. And you should be able to get that generator. It doesn't mean you know anything about the polylogarithm, because that's a very complicated thing. But at least, so you see, we talked a lot in this week about the zeta of k modulo pi to the k. So this is like looking at the polylogarithm at that value divided by pi. That's exactly what this is. And what can you say about that? I think so. Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, I mean, I mean, Herbert Gangl is one of those wizards in this field, and he does all these calculations. I mean, you can write a computer program, there's a finite set of generators, and then just find out which one it is. I'm sure he would tell me immediately, but if he answers. Yeah, I think you know what this would be. And the feeling, of course, is it should involve the fundamental unit in one way or the other, and it should do that. Okay. So this is about the interpretation of this Borel regulator in terms of now really being a determinant of some polylogarithm the same way we want it to be. For 3 and 5, this is okay by now. 2 and 3 is fine. And then, of course, for all the other ones, it should have the same pattern, but they are still not in the, they don't know exactly the generating relations. I mean, you have a finite bound, and they are checking all possible relations, and they are getting more and more complicated. So the record is something like n is equal to 7, where they have a list of relations. But the philosophy should still be the same. This is the regulator, this is the determinant of a matrix which has the right size, and the entries are polylogarithms of a basis of this block group, the K group. Okay. So now, so the question is now, what about this other? these other things. So what do we know about the general conjecture? Well, of course, I forgot to mention that in this approach, if you ignore rational numbers, right, then this is, of course, true. That's already what Borel proved. Yeah, so modulo a non-zero rational number, this is the same as his regulator. That was one of this result. So it's about interpreting this non-zero rational number. Okay, so this is now what I want to do.
No.
This comes through the interpretation of Bloch, really. And it was Bloch's idea. I mean, these, as you mentioned, I think these polylogarithms are buried forever. And then there's someone who sees something and says, oh, there is something like that. And he, I think in those days he didn't Google. I don't know what he did, but I mean, he knew about the thing. And then he started modifying this die logarithm and then doing the calculation. So it's part of so the question is, what is known? And how do you do this? So I'm in general. So this thing so let me just write Lichtenbaum in. So Lichtenbaum's conjecture. So there's a cohomological version, and I explain this afterwards. Where these have, it's not the motivic homology, it's more like an atomic homology interpretation of these rational numbers, and I get to that in a sense. So this cohomological version of Lichtenbaum holds for abelian extensions of Q. So in the abelian case, we know that. That's something we did, I think it's about 15 years ago or something, seems like a long time. So this was joint work with Nian Kwang Do in Besançon and some help of Flekinger, who was also in Besançon. Okay, so, and the idea was, well, we don't know anything about this regulator, really. So what you try to do is you try to compute the regulator on a sublattice. And since this is all abelian, you have some kind of a canonical way. And inside of your units, you have cyclotomic units. And the regulator map on cyclotomic units, and there are cyclotomic elements in this K group. So on that cyclotomic elements, you can evaluate the regulator. This was done by Dick Gross, and you get derivatives of L functions. You get Gauss sums of these, and that gives you some other relation to the zeta function. But you have to make sure that the index, you have to compute the index of that lattice. And that turns out to be the order of exactly this H and F. So there is a result like that. And then you at least get the right approach involving the regulator. You still have to do a lot of work on these rational numbers. But so this is okay. And of course, if I say it's known, then it means up to powers of 2. Didn't I? Yeah, I said this. Oh, it's gone now. Lichtenbaum only did never touch the prime 2. And according to Tong, my good friend here, the prime 2 doesn't exist. He just claims it doesn't exist because it's always giving you some trouble. Right? And, yeah. So I wanted to get to the cohomological version. I want to take the case that n large a equal to 2 is even and f is totally real. So that's equivalent to saying that dn is 0. Remember, dn for real ones was exactly the number of complex places, and we forced this to be 0. So there's no regulator, and obviously that's easier. We don't have to deal with that problem. And so there is no vanishing of the zeta function. So I have zeta f of 1 minus n. And this should just be up to a sign. The quotient of these two numbers. And of course, that's known much generally. I mean, if we ignore plus the prime 2, this is a theorem. It works for all fields, whether abelian or not. And so here is how this is done. So you have a rational number on the left-hand side, you have a rational number on the right-hand side. How do you prove they are equal? Well, you show, if you have no other idea, that they have the same p parts for all primes p. So you fix a prime p, and then you show that zeta f of 1 minus n has the same, that's my notation for the same valuation as this WNF, or HNF over WNF. And then this one here, with respect to P, is related to a p-adic theory. So now you're going to p-adic world. So this is p-adic L functions or p-adic zeta function, which at this range has the same p-adic valuation. And here you just take the p part, and now you want to know what that is. And now that gives us the cohomological interpretation. So the HNF, and I'm taking the p part of that integer, that turns out to be the order of a cohomology group, which is it's our cohomology. And I'm making this very complicated, but it's ZPM. So I should really say, if I want to boost it up, this is the Itard cohomology of the spectrum of OF1 over P, invert P, with values in some inverse limit of a sheaf. That's what Grothendieck defined. But, I mean, there's a Galois interpretation of this. Namely, what you do is you take your field F and you take the maximal algebraic extension of F, which is unramified outside of primes over P and infinity. So you do a Galois group of an extension which has restrictive ramification. And that Galois group gives you the Itard cohomology. That should be enough to explain that. So you're getting these, and remember, this varies with P. So you're looking at the Itard cohomology of a different ring all the time. And you're going up a different extension all the time. So nevertheless, the statement that the p-adic valuation of this is equal to that quotient is nothing but the main conjecture on Ivazova theorem, if you really read it correctly. So this here is true because of Wiles. This is the so-called main conjecture on Ivazova theory, which goes to ZP extensions and so on, and that is one of the consequences. So if you want, this is the prototype of a class number formula in the p-adic world. You get something here, which is an L function, and it calculates the values of some algebraic object. Okay, that's complicated. Okay. So if I say then that we prove the cohomological version, it means we proved exactly this, that these numbers here, yeah, are just the products of all p of these cohomology groups. And now is the tie, why is this a formula involving the K-theory groups, the original one? Therefore, you need motivic cohomology. So I think I have 3 minutes, so that's fine. Okay, so here's the picture. Here's your K group. And so for now, I is 1 or 2. So it's either odd or even. So I look at this of the ring of integers. Okay. And there is something which is called motivic cohomology. So the notation is, this is a script M of the ring, and this is kind of a short for blocks, cycle complex. Right? This is a higher shell group defined originally by Bloch, but it became a machinery in the hands of Vygotsky. So, which gave him the Fields Medal. So there seems to be an inflation of Fields Medals in this field. So. And this is an isomorphism up to two torsion, right? So this is an isomorphism up to two torsion. Now, if anything deserves to be called motivic cohomology, you should recover etal cohomology if you tensor things by ZP, because that's what the original motivation of Grothendieck, the motivic cohomology should be one which recovers, which maps to etal cohomology, Deram cohomology, whatever you can think, and that's in fact true. So in other words, this thing here has the property that if you tensor everything with ZP, you're getting the corresponding etal cohomology, the one I wrote down. And therefore, this version here, lifted back, gives you the global formulation in terms of motivic cohomology, and if you forget about the prime 2, it gives you the right result for Lichtenbaum. But the correct formula should be in the following way. So I just put the motivic in here, that's the order of the motivic cohomology group, the same here, and you have to modify this a little bit to make it a motivic one. And that is true now for this is true for abelian extensions. The prime 2, there's still one case which is open. So one of my students did one case, the harder one, I think, and the other one, we're running out of steam, I think. So he's now a banker. Yeah, he worked on regulators, obviously, and I think they misunderstood what he was doing. So they made him a risk manager or something like that. So that was a regulator. He was regulating things, so he should know. So you never give up. You always find a job if you do mathematics. So, okay. I think I stop here. Yes.